Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me today. I was saying to a few people, my second time in Chicago, both times I haven't seen anything besides this room. I have to come again.
This is all there is.
I looked out the window in the cab, you know. I'm here today to do some Tanakh with you now. We just did some Gemara and Halacha. And I would like to discuss with you a topic that I think is relevant for everyone. Favoritism. As a parent, I think we all try our best not to favor any of our children over another. As grandparents, we give a dollar to this one, a dollar to this one, a dollar to this one. We are so careful. But then you ask our children, does mommy have a favorite? And the answer normally is, yep. So favoritism is a reality, whether we like it or not. It's in every family. It's amongst our friends. We pick favorites if we have best friends. Or my daughters like to say besties, you know. We have favorites at work. As a boss, you pick who your favorite employers are. Certainly employers of the month and things like that, or just people that you treat differently than you treat others. It is a reality. It's not only a reality in our lives, it's a reality in Tanakh. But as we know, when it comes to Tanakh, we really only hear things that are relevant for us in Tanakh, things that we're supposed to learn messages about. Other details don't end up in the text of Tanakh because we're not able to learn from it. So why is there so much on favoritism in Tanakh? So much. We're just going to hit Bereishit, and we're going to see so much, and maybe a little bit of Nevi too, but so incredible much. So therefore, there's got to be something we could learn from it. There's got to be something we could take away from all these stories that we have in Tanakh. What we're going to do is a number of stories, as you follow along with me in the source sheets that I hope everybody has. But we're going to start out of order, because we're going to start with, I would say, the story that epitomizes favoritism, which is the story of Yaakov and Yosef. Because when you say favoritism, the first thing that pops into everybody's head is the way that Yaakov treated Yosef. And when you read this story in Tanakh, and I teach this story in Stern all the time, you want to yell at Yaakov. You want to say, what are you thinking, Yaakov? Did you really think the other brothers weren't going to hate Yosef? Did you really think they weren't going to do something mean? Maybe they weren't, you didn't think they would sell him or put him in a pit. I don't know. But something, what were you thinking? That's what you want to say. The first thing we have to realize is, always, as a reader of Tanakh, we see something from the perspective of the reader, which is not always so obvious for the person inside the story themselves. I'll give you a really good example in Tanakh. I love teaching Sefer Shoftim, the book of Judges, right? In that book, there's a cycle, and the actual book itself tells us the cycle, right? We start serving Avodah Zarah, God gets mad at us, gives us over to an enemy, we're in trouble, and then we do tshuva, and we cry out to God, and then we're all back, and everything's good again, he sends a hero who saves us, and then it goes, happens again, we serve Avodah Zarah. And you look at that time period, and you're like, what are you doing, Am Yisrael? Stop serving Avodah Zarah. Don't you see so clearly if you stopped, your life would be okay? And the answer, of course, is no, they didn't see that. They didn't know that. It's a period of 300 or more years. They didn't have that microscope look that we have, which clearly sees a cycle. So too, you can answer for Yaakov, maybe it wasn't as obvious as we think. However, let's still try to understand what are we supposed to take from the story, and what was Yaakov thinking to some extent. And then we're going to take what we learned from Yaakov and apply it to all the other stories as well. So let's start. Source number one. Source number one starts with, and we're going to come back to source number one a number of times because I'm going to pick apart these psukim. But the first few words, Ela toldos Yaakov Yosef. These are the generations of Yaakov Yosef. He is 17 years old. Yosef, 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 Yosef. That's really all we hear about. Well, that's very strange. These are the generations of Yaakov. He has 12 sons. Why does it say Yosef? If you look at source 2, 3, and 4, I give you a number of other examples, three other examples, where we have the words Ela Toldos in Tanakh, these are the generations of, and then what typically happens is we hear about all the children, because that makes sense. If I'm going to tell you the generations of, let's look at number two, Ela Toldos Noach, I'm going to tell you about Noach. So then the next pasuk, Noach has three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. And if I'm going to tell you source three about the grandchildren of Noach, then I'm going to go, and the pasukim go on, all the generations that come out of Noach. Or source four, I'm going to tell you the Ela told us Terach, and I want to tell you Terach had three sons, Avram, Nahor, and Haran. That's the norm. So therefore, our story says, Ela told us Yaakov, and all of a sudden, all we hear about is Yosef. It's a little strange. So the Mepharshim go in two directions. Rashbam, which I didn't give you, just says, no, it's telling us this is the life of Yaakov, and then we go on to discuss in the next number of Prokim what happens to all of his sons. But others who say, no, there's something much more going on here. I gave in the Kliyak our source number 5. What does this come to teach us? Shehu ikar toldot shalo. According to Yaakov, he was the most important. Yosef was the most important of all his children, and the pasuk is telling us that within the first few words. Well, if you didn't get it from the first few words, you could take it from the next pasuk. Go back to source number 1, pasuk Gimel. V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav. Okay, can't get more obvious than that. Yaakov loved Yosef more than all of his other sons. That's what the pasuk says. And therefore, what does he do because he loves him more? He does what in parenting, if there was a parenting class, my kids are convinced that I went to parenting school to learn to be a mommy. I mean, there are classes you could take, but you know, you don't need class for becoming a parent, you just have children, Baruch Hashem. Mitzvah Puravu, which we just learned about a few minutes ago. What's the biggest, one of the biggest rules? Don't give something or a very big gift to one child and not give something, at least, to others. What does Yaakov do in these psukim? Look back at Pasuk Gimel. We'll come back to Ki Ben Zikunim Hu in a second, though. The Asalo Ketona Pasim makes him a fancy schmancy coat, gives him a present. Now realize this isn't just a private present that Yaakov said, here's something beautiful I made you, put in your room, put with your stuff, don't show it to your brothers, right? We do that as parents, like, don't tell the others, right? You know? But what does he do? A coat! And you wear it, and you walk around with it. This is not private. This is as public as can be. But the coat is so important. Why a coat? So what I gave you here in source 6, 7, and 8 is showing you that the coat represents much more than just, let me give you a special present. A coat represents being important, being a leader, being somebody that Yaakov is trying to give him that encouragement and saying, you are somebody. You are awesome. I gave you in source number 6 first, which is a little bit out of order of the other psukim, but it's the only other time in Tanakh we have the word ketonet pasim. Same usage of the word of this type of coat with the stripes and the colors. And it's talking about Tamar, David's daughter, va'alaha ketonet pasim ki kein telvashna benot ha-melech ha-betulot mi'ilim. It was a special coat that a princess only used to wear, when she was a virgin, she used to wear this coat as a symbol of her status. But what we see, I mean, the rest of the story is pretty tragic, what we see about the coat is, it's a status. It's saying, I'm somebody of a very specific value. And for her, it was, I'm a princess who is a virgin. We have source number 7 and 8. We have the story of Shaul wearing a coat, Shaul HaMelech, Shaul the king. And in source 8, Yonatan, the prince, wears a coat, as I am the next king in line. And he gives over that coat to David as saying, you're the next king in line. A coat means you're somebody of significance. You're somebody of leader status. It's not just giving a present. And the Hachtava Kabbal in source number 9 says it very beautifully. Ketona pasim, why a coat? Le'ot shehu yiyeh ha-manhig v'bayit v'sadeh. It was a message. Yaakov was saying to Yosef and to his sons, this guy, Yosef, he is in charge. He's in charge in the house. He's in charge of the in the field. He's the leader of the family. Ki bayamim ha-heim hayu ha-mabushim nerachim kifi ma'alat ha-ish. The way you dress showed your value. V'lachim pasim. So to Paro gives him special clothing when he becomes second to king. So here his father is saying, you are of different value than the rest of your sons. You are the rest of my sons. He is more important, and therefore I'm giving you this coat. But it's more than that. I want to take it one step further. Source number 10 is a beautiful story, and these two stories are the only two in all of Tanakh where you have a parent giving a coat to a child. And this is the story in Shmuel Aleph of Chana. Hannah is a woman who could not have children. She's married to Elkanah. And finally, she has a child, and his name is Shmuel the Navi. And Shmuel, she has to give over to work in the Mishkan with Eli, because she promised before she had this baby, I promise if you give me a child, I'll let him work in the Mishkan. And tragically, she finally has this child and she has to give him up. And the Pasuk tells us, U'me'il katan ta'selo imo, v'al talo miyamim yamima. Every year, she used to make him a coat. And when she would come every year, when they would come every year to visit and to give a korban in the Mishkan, she would bring him a new coat. You imagine this mother who is so sad about missing her son, and she is making this coat every single day. She's working on this coat, so she finally brings it to him, and it's a token of her absolute love for this child. And I think that these are the only two stories of a parent giving a child a coat. We not just see Yaakov saying, you're the leader of my household, but he's saying, I love you. I absolutely love you, which is clear in the Pasuk V'Yisrael Ahavet Yosef Mikol Banav. He loves him more than his other sons. Not only that, we see clearly in the Pesukim he's treated differently. The Pasuk, if we go back to source one again, the Pasuk Bet, which we read, Elatos Yaakov Yosef Ben Shavasri Shana Yaretz Achav Batzon, Hu Na'eretz B'nei Bilhavetz B'nei Zilpa Neshe Aviv, which the Mefarshim point out, he used to boss them around, he used to be in charge, the Pasuk continues, he used to tattle to his father. He had a different type of role that he used to play, kind of leading or in charge of some of the other brothers. We see that clearly here in source 11 as well, where the Ramban tries to explain to us why is he called Ben Zikunim. Ben Zikunim means a son that is born when I am old. But if you think about it, who should be the Ben Zikunim? Binyamin, not Yosef, and later Binyamin is called that, but right now when Binyamin is already born, Yosef is called that. Says the Ramban, a very beautiful Ramban, source 11. It was a status. It wasn't, I happen to be the youngest child. It is that when fathers got older, they would specifically pick a child that would be with them all the time to help them, to be with them and to do all the things that they need to get done. They would stay with them all the time. That's what this is. That's what Ben Zikunav is. Bavur Shisha Sal Zikunav. They take care of them when they're old. And this was Yosef's job. He didn't go out to the field. He didn't have to shepherd the sheep. He didn't have to work. He got to stay home with his father. Therefore, we see the treatment that he has is incredibly different, which also explains why he was home when Yaakov said, go out and see how they're doing in the field, why he wasn't with them out in the field. Therefore, when you leave all this, Pesukim we all know, we're not surprised, we're again back in source 1, Pasuk Dalet, Vayiru Echav Ki Oto Ahav Aviyah Mikol Echav Vayisnu Oto V'Leich Lu Dabar L'Shamam. They hate him. You're not surprised. Of course they do. And the Pasuk later says, Vayiknu Oto, they're jealous of him. They hate him. You may be surprised by what they do, but you're not surprised by the emotions that they have. So we're not here to discuss the brothers, that's a whole other discussion, but let's discuss Yaakov. What is Yaakov doing? Why is he creating such a dynamic in his home, which is going to create jealousy and hatred? Why would he do such a thing? And I think when we think about favoritism, especially favoritism in Tanakh, we have to look at it from two very different approaches. The approach that I like to call the humanistic approach, the human nature approach, and the other one which I would like to call the spiritual approach or the more elevated approach, meaning that there's more to it than just natural behavior. And I think it very nicely fits into our very different approaches that we look at characters in Tanakh, people like Avot, people like David, people like Shlomo, do we look at them as like superhuman and therefore there's no way that they would have a human emotion? Or do we look at them as human and therefore certainly they are on a credible level, but they can behave like a human would and have human emotions just like everyone else? And I think both of these are interacting with each other throughout all of our stories of favoritism, the humanistic approach and this more elevated approach. Let me explain to you what I mean. If you think about it from the humanistic level, Yaakov, okay? Let's try to understand his favoritism. Every person, all of us, choose favorites on a humanistic approach. And you could look at it in two very different ways. You could say you're choosing friends, one friend over another, which you could say, well, that's, you're being cliquey. You could be negative about it. Or you could say, I'm choosing a chevra. I'm choosing my friends. And that's a positive. This doesn't necessarily have to be a negative. Why do you choose certain friends over others? Normally, it's because you get along with them better. You share a common history. You have similar ideas. You have maybe similar personalities or maybe opposite personalities that blend together. All of that could be what's going on here with Yaakov. Think about it for a moment. Yaakov and Yosef share something that he does not share with the other brothers, which is Rachel. Yaakov, as we know the story, loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. We could question if he loved Leah, didn't love Leah, that's another discussion. But he loved Rachel intimately, it's very clear in the Psukim. And then Rachel tragically dies very young. And what he has left are two boys. One is a baby, and one is the baby that in that process of having that baby, she died. And one is this image that reminds him of Rachel, Yosef. And therefore, he clings to Yosef. And to me, it is not a surprise if you look at source 12. The verb that is used to describe the love that Yaakov has for Rachel is also used to describe the love that Yaakov has for Yosef. Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel, and v'Yisrael ahav et Yosef mikol banav. He loves them, again, connecting them together. Not only that, we know he associates them together in source 13 that I gave you. When he is earlier meeting up with Esav, when Rachel is still alive, we see very clearly who is his favorite. And his favorite is, of course, his Rachel with her son Yosef, as he puts everyone else in the front. And all the way in the back where I bolded, V'achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel v'yishtachu, all the way at the end, he tries to protect as much as he can his beloved Rachel and Yosef. Now she dies, and it's not crazy for us to realize that he, of course, is going to treat Yosef different. Number one, he's lacking a mother, right? And number two, he has a bond with this child because this child reminds him of Rachel. It's also fascinating, if you look at source 14, the description of the looks of Rachel matches the description of the looks of Yosef, which makes me question, did they actually look very similar? If you look at source 14, it discusses Rachel, she's Yifat Tawar V'Yifat Mareh. There are many women in Tanakh who are described as beautiful, but the language for each one is slightly different. Yosef matches his mother, except, obviously, his is masculine and hers is feminine. But if you look at the next pasuk, Vayhi Yosef, Yifeh Toar V'Yifeh Mareh. It's the exact same language of description, and in my mind, it's showing us that it's not just he was good-looking and she was good-looking. They looked similar to each other. And therefore, you could argue that every single time Yaakov looked at Yosef, he saw Rachel. So, of course, he was going to treat Yosef differently, and of course, that special bond is going to take place. Yosef, this lonely boy who doesn't have a mother and has this little baby brother, but has no one, and his father is his parent, his only parent, he's going to bond with this father, and the father's going to bond with him very differently than this other group of brothers born to a different wife who he does not love as much. On top of that, let's add to this, which is Yosef had quite a personality. We focus very much so on the Yosef personality in his home. But that's not the personality that he had amongst other people, and I think the personality Yaakov saw. If you think about it, a lot of times we look at our siblings in one way, and we get shocked when other people tell us things about our siblings that don't match what we think of them, not because we love them, but you see them differently. If you look at the psukim that I gave you in source 15, Yosef, when he was amongst other people, first when he's with Potiphar, then when he's in jail, then when he's in front of Paro, he has a charismatic personality. He has this personality that everyone just seems to like him. If you look at where I bolded, right, if you look at source 15, he's in Potiphar's house, he's a slave. Yosef chen be'enav, Yosef finds favor in his eyes, and the next thing we know, everything is in Yosef's power. He's running the whole household. Jail too, the pasuk tells us, I gave you again, just look where I bolded, v'yetel av chesed, v'yetel chino be'nesar be'tatsohar, he likes him, the guy in charge of jail, just likes Yosef, and makes him in charge, and of course, famously, Paro as well. Ein Navon v'chacham kamocha is the wisest person in the world. There was something about Yosef that was just charming. Yaakov, I'm sure, saw that in Yosef, and therefore was charmed by him. And of course, therefore, when you like someone's personality, you hang out with them more, and of course, you build a special bond with them as well. It's interesting to me, the language that we see by Yosef mimics very much so the language we see by Esther, which I gave you in source 16 and 17. Interesting enough, Esther is the third and only Now we only have three, who uses that exact language of beauty, Yifat Tovar v'Tovat Mareh. It is only Rachel, Yosef, and Esther, bonding the three of them together in the Psukim. Everybody else, again, are called beautiful. Many women are beautiful, but the language is not the same. And Esther, very similarly, is described like Yosef. You look in Source 17, V'atihi Esther, Nosechein, Beinekor. Everyone who saw her just liked her, was charmed by her. Very similar personalities. And again, if that's what Yaakov saw, we understand why he would feel so connected. Just to add one more layer here, Source 18, Rashi brings down a famous midrash that he believes another reason why Yaakov liked Yosef is because they had so many things in common. If you look where I bolded in the middle, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I know I'm going to run out of time already. Yaakov, so many similar things that happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. And I go through a whole list. You know, both of them, their mothers had trouble having children. Their mother only had two children. Both of them have older brothers who didn't like them so much. I mean, he says both of them have brothers that tried to get rid of them and made them run away, but not that he would know that at the time. But they had a lot in common. And there again, why do we favor one person over another in terms of being our friends? Things in common, common history, liking their personality, getting along with them, bonding with them. All of these things are 100% true when it comes to Yaakov and Yosef. And therefore, to some extent, it makes total sense why Yaakov would favor Yosef over the rest of the brothers. Not only that, we also have to understand that when it comes to big families with multiple wives, favoritism was extremely common. I gave you a number of psukim here, where always when there were many wives, the husband had to pick the favorite wife, and therefore normally the children became the favorite children too. So certainly by Yaakov, I gave you the pasuk here in Source 19, where we see, Vayavo gamatz Rachel, Vayahav gamatz Rachel Meleah, he loved Rachel more. Yosef therefore being the favorite child. Abraham, Sarah being the favorite wife, and therefore at some point Hagar, and therefore with her Yishmael had to go. Elkanah, we discussed the parents of Shmuel. It's clear in the pasuk Source 20, ki at Chana ahev, he loved Chana more than Penina. And David, we know so many wives, but Sheva seems to be the favorite. So that's very common in those days. You had to pick one. But that's the humanistic approach, which I think is very understandable when we take a step back and we think about Yaakov and Yosef's lives, why Yaakov would favor Yosef, even if it had a horrible result, why that would be true. But let's now take a second approach, the elevated approach. I think both are true, but the more spiritual or elevated, whatever you want to call this approach, which is Yaakov wasn't only favoring a child because he liked them better. Yaakov was favoring a child because he was trying to create a chosen nation. And if you look back, Abraham picked a child, one. Yitzhak picked one. So Yaakov thought, I get one. So he looks through his children, which one am I going to pick? And in his mind, at least at this point in the story, it was going to be Yosef. He changes his mind later. But in the beginning of the story, it seems incredibly clear Yosef was the favorite, and therefore Yosef was the chosen. And then it makes sense. If he's the chosen, the one who is supposed to create the chosen nation, he of course needs more of my time. He of course needs to be treated differently. This is the one who's going to merit having a special nation come out of him. And therefore I take you back to those words once again. Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef. And I gave you here in Source 21 and Source 22, two other places where the word Ela told us does not give us a list of everyone. But those are locations where Ela told us is telling us who's chosen. Ela told us Yitzhak ben Avram, Avram holidit Yitzhak. It's a really weird pasuk, right? The generations of Yitzhak, he's the son of Avram, Avram gave birth to Yitzhak. It actually doesn't tell us his children at all. But it's telling us this direct line, Yitzhak is the chosen son. It's right when Avram dies, he is the next in line. Even though Avram has more children, next in line in terms of the chosen nation. And we see that in the next pasuk I gave you, Avram giving everything to Yitzhak in Bereishis Chaf Hei pasuk Hei. In Source 22, we see it as well. Ela told us Aaron and Moshe. And then you continue on in the pasuk, and it only tells us Aaron's children. Why? Because Aaron's children become the Kohen Gadol, or Kohanim Gadolim, or Kohanim, and Moshe's don't become anything. And therefore, we're only picking the ones who are chosen when we are sometimes saying Ela told us. Therefore, the pasuk is telling us, Ela told us Yaakov, who did he think was chosen? It was Yosef. And therefore, he doted on Yosef. This makes so much sense now also in terms of giving him a special coat. Because if you look at Source 23, 24, 25, I want to show you that passing along clothing is something that one generation does when they're saying to the next one, you're taking over my job, you're taking over my position. So we have in Source 23, Aaron literally undressing and dressing his son Elazar, who's becoming the next Kohen Gadol. We have Yonatan, even though Yonatan and David are the same generation, in Source 24, it's such a beautiful pasuk, I love this pasuk, where Yonatan, who is supposed to be the king, he is the son of Shaul, the oldest son of Shaul, he is supposed to be the next king, and he realizes David is going to be the king, his friend, his best friend David. He takes off his coat, takes it off, he gives it to David and says to him, I know you're going to be king. It's this taking of the coat, it's saying, I know you're next in line. So to Eliyahu, though Eliyahu's got a personality, he doesn't do anything the normal way, so he lets it fall to the floor, and Elisha's got to bend down and pick it up, but it's telling Elisha he is next in line, taking over the job of Navi after Eliyahu. So what we do see is a passing of a coat is not just here's an awesome present, and it's not you're just going to be a leader and you're going to be great, and it's not just I love you so much I'm giving you a coat, it's I think you're taking over me, my job, I think you're next in line for what I represent. And for Yaakov, that's being the of Am Yisrael, and that's what he thought he was passing down to Yosef. And if that's true, you can't blame him for one second for treating Yosef differently. This is the son, of course, that should stay home with me all day, and I should be giving him all my values, because this is the beginning of the chosen nation. The other sons can go out. Why would I send him out if I want my values all instilled in him, because he's my next in line? And that explains to us, again, putting together this humanistic approach and this elevated approach, why this exact scenario would take place with Yaakov and Yosef. Let's take a break from Yaakov, because we have a lot of Yaakov stories to come back to. And let's go to Avram for a minute. Avram, as we know, has a number of sons, but I want to focus on his first two, Yishmael, who he has with Hagar, and, of course, Yitzchak, who he has with Sarah. If we just look at this story, we see a different phenomenon. There's going to be a difference between the humanistic approach of Abraham and who he wants to favor and who maybe we can even argue he favors more versus the elevated approach of who he knows has to get chosen. And that's going to actually come in contrast with each other. When it came to Yaakov and Yosef, it was the same. It was the same person. But when it comes to Abraham, it might be different, and therefore I think we need to see that struggle in the psukim. If you start off our conversation here of Abraham and Yishmael, you have to understand it from a humanistic approach, which is Avraham goes years and years of not being able to have children. Source 26, he screams out to God, Vayomer Avram, Hainli lo nasata zera, you didn't give me any children, you're promising me you'll have children like the stars in the sky, the sands on the earth. And Avram's like, what are you talking about? I don't have a single child. So finally, after 10 years of being in Israel, Sarah says, I have an idea, take Hagar, my maid, have a child. Through her, we will have a child together, and that's in Source 27. We realize we're not going to have a child together. So now, he does this plan. He has a child. How old is he? Source 28. Avram ben Shmonim Shana Vesheshanim. He's 86 years old. He's been waiting a very, very long time to have this child. When does he find out that this is not a chosen child? Not until the next pasuk I gave you. Vayehi Avram ben Tishim Shana v'Teisha Shanim. Not until he's 99 years old. 13 years. 13 years Avraham believes this is the chosen child. 13 years Avram is alone with this child as being his only child, putting all his love into this child, putting all his affection into this child, all his teaching into this child, all his belief into this child. And then when the child is 13 years old, Avram is told, sorry, Avram, you're going to have another one. And Avram doesn't take it so well. And sometimes you look at Avram and you're like, what's your problem? Sarah's having a baby. Be so happy. But you can understand why he wouldn't. Look at Source 29 with me. Hashem turns to Avram, Pasuk Tevav, Vayomer Elokim al Avram, Sarah ishtecha lo tekra at shema Sarah. Sarai, ki Sarah Shema, let's change Sarah's name from Sarai to Sarah. Uberachti ota vegam natati mimenu l'chaben, uberachtiha v'haitala goyim machay ami mimenu yu. She is going to have a child, and that child is going to be that chosen nation. Hooray, hooray, what you've been waiting for is finally here. You assume Avram's going to say, throw a party. Right? Whoa! Vayomer Avram Elokim, lo! Yishma yechia lefanecha. No! What about Yishmael? And God says back, no way. You're going to have another child. It's going to be Yitzchak. He's the one. He's the one that I choose. Then look at Pasuk Chav. He like huffs off. He's finished. It's not a conversation, right? You're gonna yell at me. I don't care. It's not Yishmael. That's the reaction of Abraham. What do you mean? My baby, 13 years. How can you do this to me? And then I see a protest in these psukim. Look at Pasuk Chaf Bet through Chaf Hey. He then goes and gives a brit milah, which is what he's supposed to do. And the pasuk over and over again emphasizes Yishmael, his son. V'hikach Avram Yishmael b'no, his son. And everybody else gives them a brit milah. Pasuk Chaf Hey. V'Yishmael b'no, ben shalosh esrei shana. His son Yishmael is 13 when he gets this brit milah. And at the end of the pasuk again, V'Yishmael b'no. Oh, it's my son. It's my son. I'm so sad. And then do you ever think about it? Why didn't he tell his wife? Remember, she doesn't find out until she overhears the three malachim in the tent. Avram knew. Why didn't he tell her? Was he in denial? I don't know. Was he upset? Was he protesting? I don't know. Was he hoping it wouldn't happen? I'm not sure. But then God has to send three malachim, and that's how she finds out, because he doesn't tell. Could you imagine if your spouse didn't tell? You know, lots of times husbands, I have this problem sometimes, don't say, you know, like if somebody tells something, you're like, why didn't you tell me? Okay, this, you know, this, come on, she's going to have a baby at 90, this is crazy. Doesn't tell. And then, we all know the story, continues, Yitzchak is born, Yishmael starts to be a bad example, whatever it is he's doing, which is so unclear in the Psukim, source 30, and Sarah says to Avram, throw him out, right? Throw him out of the house. Pasuk Yidalef, Vayera hatavar me'o b'nei Avram, aladot b'no. He's so upset about his son. And God has to step in and say, Shema b'kola, listen to Sarah, because Avram couldn't do it, he's so attached to Yishmael. But who could blame him? 13 years of raising this child, loving this child, who could throw out a child after that? Who could say, okay, I'll give up on him and replace him with a new one? It doesn't work that way. And what's interesting to me is there's so many psukim and midrashim that pick up on this, okay, this emotion of Abraham. And I want to show you a few. 31 here, Abraham is being commanded, Akedas Yitzchak. Okay? And at this point, Avram has to accept that Yitzchak is the chosen son. He knows that. But he has this kind of hesitation in him. And when God says to him, Kachas bincha, source 31, Es yechidcha asher ahavta, take your son, your only son, assuming he has no others, even though he does have Yishmael, the one that you love, et Yitzchak. Right? The one you love, Yitzchak. And then after the Akedah, if you look up, because I gave it to you the next Pasuk, Pasuk Yudbet, God is saying, good job, right? Good job what you did. And the very end, he says, Lo chashachta es bincha es yechidcha mimenu. You didn't, right? You didn't deny your son, your only son from me. Leaving out the adjective, asher ahavta, that you love. It's not there. So the question is, why? Is it that something changed in the Akedah? Or is it that the first one was God was saying, it's the one you're supposed to love, it's Yitzchak, and this one he's saying, okay, the reality, okay, it's not the one you love. Yishmael is the one that your heart is set on. Or, Rashi wants to make it a little nicer, he says, that's Bincha, look at source 32, Amar l'shnei banim yeshli, God says, take your son. And Avram protests, I have two sons, right? Even though I had to kick one out. I got two. Amar l'shechidcha, no, it's your only son. And he says, no. Amar zeyachidima, what do you mean? Yishmael is the only one to his mother, and Yitzchak is the only one to his mother. Amar l'sherahav, Amar l'sheman yohev, what are you talking about? I love them both, right? Protesting. Oh, okay, does he love both? Does he only love one? Unclear. Then what's interesting, again, in the Midrash, source 33, Rashi tells us, to the Akedah, who are the two men he brings to the Akedah? Yishmael v'Eliezer. Why is he bringing them for? Is it possibly the replacement that he thought maybe he was going to have when he killed his son? I mean, he thought he's killing Yitzchak, right? So clearly a new heir. There's got to be somebody who's taken over the chosen nation. Was he in the back of his head saying, oh, good, you know, other chance for Yishmael? Obviously, he doesn't want to kill his son. But I'm saying, is there this Yishmael he can't seem to let go? And we see it in the Psuk, the Midrash even further in source 34. There are these beautiful Midrashim about Abraham visiting Yishmael throughout his lifetime. visiting his son because he was so connected to him. I just want to read the first line because there's an interesting point here. Source 34. La'achar gimel shanim halach Avram lerot et Yishmael. 4 years later, 3 years later, Avram decides he's going to go visit Yishmael. V'nishpa l'sara she'eni yoreh min hagamal. How'd he get there? Promised his wife he wouldn't get off the camel, right? V'makom she'Yishmael she'rish. I'm just going to see him. I'm not getting off. And then, of course, he does, and he has a whole conversation. But the point is, it was kind of this protest. He had his whole life, his wife saying, cut him off, cut him off. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't let go of Yishmael. And not only that, I think it ties so beautifully together the famous midrash that we all know in Source 35, where Rashi tells us, Keturah is Hagar, meaning that when Sarah died, he actually reunited with Yishmael. He remarried Hagar and brought Yishmael back, which maybe can explain Source 36, why Yishmael is there to bury Abraham. Because maybe they became one big, again, happy, I put a question mark there, I don't know, family at the very end. So here's where we see kind of that spiritual approach fighting with the humanistic approach. He knows Yitzhak is the chosen one, and he knows that he has to get rid of Yishmael, and he's got to be the one to only have Yitzhak in his home and train Yitzhak, but his heart can't let go of Yishmael, even if on a spiritual level he really was supposed to. I'm going to go to the third story. This is another major favoritism story because the pasuk tells us so really clearly, which is Yitzchak and Rivka to Yaakov and Esau. So Yaakov learned it from somewhere. Here we go, his father, source 37. Pasuk tells us, V'igdalu ha'narim v'yeisav ish yodea tzayid ish sadeh v'yaakov ishtam yoshev o'alim. The boys grow up, right? They're twin boys, Esav and Yaakov. Esav is a hunter, he's out in the field. Yaakov is whatever ishtam is, a simple man, the midrash, he's a learner, he's in the tent. He's sitting in the tent. Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav. Yitzchak loves Esav. Kitzai b'fiv. V'rivka ohev et Yaakov. And Rivka prefers Yaakov. So again, humanistic approach. Let's think this through. It makes so much sense, right? If Esav is out in the field, Esav is the hunter, who's he hanging out with? His father, who's out there too, right? And as we know, the famous Mefarshim I gave you here in Source 38, what is Kitzai b'fiv, right? It was that he would hunt, find meat, feed his father, right? We all know, right? They always say, way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? So all day, you'd hunt for his father, feed his father. You got to assume they sat down together, had a little barbecue, talked, bonded. They were close. Yaakov, Yoshev Olim, he's in the tent. We know he's cooking soup, right? Who's he hanging out with? His mom, Rivka. So of course Yitzchak favors Esav because they hang out all the time. And of course Rivka favors Yaakov because they hang out all the time. They have in common, they have history, they're hanging out, it makes sense very, very much. Not only that, Radak points out, possibly Rivka loved Yaakov more because she wasn't so thrilled at the job Esav chose. A hunter who could die at any moment, not a favorite thing for any mother. You know, when your child is in a dangerous situation. So again, she preferred the choices of Yaakov over those of Esav. Rav Hirsch takes a little bit of a different approach in Source 40, but so too with the same outcome. The Yitzchak's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav. Rebekah to Yaakov could moreover easily be explained by the attraction of opposites. We see Yitzchak risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the well of the live one who seeth me, away from the busy traffic of men. Yitzchak, if you look through his personality, very quiet, very shy, very within to himself, not out there in the world. And here he's got this son, that Esav, lusty, active nature appealed to him, that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost could be a support to the home would be quite possible. He looked at his son, who's out there in the field, hunting, so brave, so loud, so outgoing, and said, wow, I wish I was like you. And therefore, was more attracted, in some sense, to favoring him, because it was something that he looked at as incredible qualities that he himself didn't have. Rebekah, Rivka, on the other hand, saw in Yaakov's whole being a picture of the life unfolding of which her father's house, she had never had the remotest idea. Meaning, in her father's house, she lived with tricky people, nasty people. And here's Yaakov, who's so tamim, who's such a good person, who has such midos that are just incredible, and to her, this is such an ideal. And therefore, he writes, the sympathies are explainable, but parents should not allow such hidden feelings to influence them in making any difference in their love towards their children. Rav Hirsch, a little bit harsh on the avot here, which is fair. But I think in general his approach is, again, maybe it's an opposite, you know, personalities being a little bit of an opposite, which is causing a humanistic understanding as to why one parent would choose the other. However, on the elevated level, they were also choosing who gets the bracha. They were choosing who's going to continue the chosen nation. And what it seems very clear, because Yitzchak was going to give the bracha to Esav, is he believed he was the next link in the Jewish nation. He believed it. He may have been wrong. I think we believe he was wrong, right? Which is not crazy. Shmuel also almost picked the wrong person to be the king before he found David, which we'll come to that story. But he thought that that was the person who was supposed to be the next in the chain. Therefore, it makes sense that he would put all his time and effort and his love into that child. Now, Rivka, she knew the truth. And why did she know the truth? Because she personally had a nevuah. She had a prophecy when she was pregnant, source 41, last three words. She was told the reason why you're in such pain is Viravia Vodatzair. You have two twins inside of you. They're fighting. And at the end of the day, the older is going to serve the younger. The younger is going to be the more important. So again, makes sense, she would favor the child that she knew is the next link in the chain. So here we have again an understanding of two parents choosing two different children to favor, and we understand it on both levels. We understand it as, I love this child better because I relate to him more, I hang out with him more. I understand on a humanistic level, but certainly again in this elevated level of choosing who's the next in line to be Am Yisrael, it makes sense as well. I want to show you the next story, which is not going to have an elevated level because we're talking about Lavan. Lavan, I don't think there's anything elevated about Lavan. But Lavan, too, favored children. And therefore, I think it's important for us to understand in Tanakh, this is a norm in every single family. It is very clear that Lavan's favorite child was Leah, not Rachel. Number one, best proof is, how would you ruin your daughter's life and marry the other daughter to the man she wants to marry if you didn't love that other one more, right? Meaning he chose Leah over Rachel and therefore took Yaakov and married him in secret to Leah and destroyed Rachel's life. Not only that, we see it even more in source 42, where it tells us that Rachel, if you look where I bolded, Rachel bitobam hatzom, Rachel was the shepherd. And it happens to be, I gave you also the Chizkuni, Kedei lechalok kavo l'gdola, wants to know why was Rachel the shepherd and not Leah? Because it happens to be in Tanakh, being a shepherd is the dirty job, right? It's the non-favored job. That's why Yosef wasn't the shepherd, the brothers were. And therefore, we have to give honor to the older one, we have to give honor to Leah, she's not the shepherd, Rachel is the shepherd. Not only that, source 43, when the trafim go missing, Lavan's idols go missing, the psukim go on and on, how he searched every inch of Rachel's tent. Why? Because he was most suspicious of her. Why? Because they didn't get along. Because Leah was the favorite child. And therefore, it makes sense, by the way, why Yaakov would prefer Rachel to Leah. The unfavored child falls in love with the one who understands him, the other unfavored child, and maybe even has some animosity towards the favorite, Leah, when he marries Leah by accident, because he bonds with Rachel over the fact that both of them are not favored by their fathers. Our next story, Yaakov and Binyamin. This one also, you have to understand it on the humanistic level, because never does Yaakov for a second believe that Binyamin is the chosen child. Yaakov loves Binyamin deeply and favors him tremendously to the extent that Binyamin is never allowed to leave his side at all. And everybody understands it. The brothers aren't even jealous of it. And therefore, again, it enlightens us to all of these stories, which is, Rachel dies, his favorite wife. Yosef disappears or dies in his mind, his favorite son. Now all he's got left is this Binyamin. Of course, he wasn't going to let go of Binyamin. Of course, this is going to be the favorite. Even if it's not going to be the chosen child, he's going to be treated differently. And source 44, Yehuda describes the relationship. And I think nobody questions this one. Yehuda says when he's talking to Yosef, "Benomar ladoni yeshanu av zaken v'yelad zikunim." He's now describing Binyamin, the son who's now the zikunim, the one who stays home with the father, katan. V'achiv mate, his brother is dead. V'yivaterhu levado li'imo. He's the only one left from his mother. So our father loves him. Our father has a special relationship. And he goes on, you take him away, our father will die. Nobody questions for a moment that relationship, but certainly if we're discussing favoritism, we have to bring it up. But I really want to discuss, when it comes to Yaakov, the last one, which is Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe are Yosef's children, and we have a fascinating story in source 45, which is Bereishis Memchet. Yaakov is dying, and he wants to give a bracha to Yosef's sons. And look at the conversation. Bayar Yosef ki yasi Aviv Yad Yimino al Rosh Ephraim, Vayera Be'enav. He sees, oh my gosh, my father is doing it again. I have two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe is the oldest. And here's my father favoring the youngest again, and he's putting his right hand on the wrong child. Vayitmoch Yad Aviv lahasiro tamei al rosh Ephraim va'al rosh Menashe. And Yosef says, I know this goes badly. He starts pulling his father's hand off Ephraim's head. Vayomer Yosef el Aviv, lo kein avi, don't do this, Dad, please. Ki zeh habachor, that one, Menashe, he's my bachor. Simi mincha rosho, please put your right hand on his head. Vayima ein aviv, but Yaakov says, I can't, I'm sorry. I know, and Menashe is going to be good. He's going to be part of Am Yisrael. He's going to have a whole nation come out of him. He'll be great. But his younger brother is going to be greater. I'm sorry. They're having here a fight. Yosef is saying, from a humanistic standpoint, you can't favor one child over the other. Bad things happen. And Yaakov is saying, but when we're creating a chosen nation, I have to, because Ephraim's going to be greater. And you know what? Both of them are right. Because Ephraim has greater people who come from him. Yoshua comes from Ephraim. Devorah comes from Ephraim. Malchi Yisrael comes from Ephraim. From Menashe, we have Gidon, we have Yiftach, but those are not as great leaders as we certainly have from Ephraim. But Yosef's also right, because you know what happens when there is leadership from Ephraim and then leadership from Menashe that comes in? They start to fight with each other. And in Sefer Shoftim, we have a civil war that takes place between Menashe and Ephraim. So Yosef's right too. When you favor one over the other, bad things happen. Competition happens and it's bad. But Yaakov turns to him and says, I'm sorry, I can't help it, because again, the elevated approach has to win. Who's going to be greater has to win in terms of favoritism. But I love the Nachshoni that I gave you as your next source, where he tries to explain to us where Yaakov actually now understood the lesson, but why Yaakov did what he did. Look at it with me. Ki Yaakov avinu yadasha Menashe hu habachor. Yaakov knew who was the bachor. Ubachol zod asa mitchila ma she'asa. He still did it milachachila. He chose, I'm going to put my right hand on Ephraim. B'yediyah b'kavanah, he did it with thought, he did it with intention. B'yosef lo yadah ki aviv osad zo b'kavanah, but Yosef didn't know that his father was doing it on purpose. V'lachin hitra'im, so he complained, Dad, you do make your mistake, you know. He just met his sons, right, not so long ago. Maybe you're mistaking, you know, this one's Menashe, this one's Ephraim. So he says, lo kein avi, don't do this, my father. V'haim lo tova siti avi b'amesha amati es b'chor l'minech, it's not good what you're doing, putting your right hand on my older, you need to put your right hand on my older son. Yaakov yadati b'ni yadati. So Yaakov answers him, no, I know what I'm doing, right? This isn't a mistake. I'm nam tova siti v'kedina siti. I'm doing the right thing. U'b'chol zo shemat samti yamini al Ephraim, ler mozet ha-safon b'ginzei ha-atid. I have to put my right hand on Ephraim because of the future and what's going to come out of him in the future. Ulam yeshna mefarshim haruim be'etzem hasima shayamin al Ephraim ve'et chachmato shal Yaakov avin. But you can look at it differently, he says, and see the genius of Yaakov by his plan, got messed up, but his plan of putting his right hand on Ephraim. Shamnar Matzala had gishes al yonato shal Ephraim. He wanted to give Ephraim the greater bracha because he was greater. Aval lo b'derach shetagia mizeh busha l'menashe b'chor. Think about it. What could he have done? He could have said, switch places, boys. Switch over and put his hands like this, right? I'm telling you, I want Ephraim to be by my right hand. Instead, he said, look down. The boys wouldn't have known. They wouldn't have known a thing. Yaakov's saying, I learned my lesson. I don't want them to know I'm favoring one over the other. But I know I have to give the greater bracha to Ephraim. So I was being quiet. And I was doing it in a way that nobody had to know. Yosef could have known. But the boys wouldn't have had to know. There would have been no negative effect. He didn't want to hurt Menashe's kavod. Menashe never would have known what he was doing until Yosef spoke up. So Yaakov, of course, had the right intention. He says, Nachshoni, I think it's such a beautiful Nachshoni, except that Yosef then messed up his plan. But we see once again kind of the humanistic approach and the elevated approach going at odds with each other. And when it comes to the avot, the elevated approach has to win. When you're choosing a chosen nation, you got to choose the one that deserves it. You have to choose the one that you think is going to be the next in line for the chosen nation. What I want to do before I take and figure out the message for us at the end is I want to take another favoritism story, but it's kind of the twist of what we've done, and come out with the lessons on everything that we've done together. And that's the story of David HaMelech. I want to take now a different model, which is not one child is favored over the rest, but one child is mistreated over the rest, okay? The Cinderella story of Tanakh, or I should say Cinderella probably comes from the story in Tanakh, which is the story of David. One of my humorous stories in Tanakh, source 46. Shmuel HaNavi comes to the house of David, to the house of Yishai. And he says to Yishai, one of your sons is the next king of the Jewish people. What do you do if somebody says that to you? You gather all your sons, you line them up, and you say, pick one, right? Okay, so that's what happens. And the oldest son comes first, and God says in Shmuel's ear, nope, not him. And then comes the next one, and the next one, and the next one. I mean, we go through all the sons, and then we run out of sons. So Shmuel, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is, right, he has a Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Shmuel al Yishai, Hatamu Anarim, did you run out of sons? Because God told me one of your sons is going to be the king, and he just told me no to everyone you showed me. Where's your other son? Comes Yishai v'yomer, oh, Sharkata, oh, yeah, I have another one, yeah, okay. Hinei Rabbetzel, remember? He's out there back in the sheep, shepherding the sheep. And they bring him in, and of course, it's David, and Shmuel says, Kum Yishai Kizehu, this is the one. What a weird story, right? You don't bring in the youngest one? You don't say maybe? And fine, maybe you don't think that David's supposed to be the chosen one. But then when you run out, you don't say, sorry, Shmuel. You say, wait, I got more. Or maybe you say, you know, I got nephews. I got like, no, sorry. You know what I mean? And the Navi has to say, what's going on? Is there another one? It's so strange. It gets even stranger. After Yishai finds out that David is the king, okay, nobody else finds out. He gets anointed as the king, but Shaul remains the king for a long period of time until Shaul dies, okay? So David really doesn't become the king until after that. Even after Shaul dies, he only becomes the king of Yehuda. It takes until Ishbosheth loses his malucha, and all of a sudden it all comes to David. So there's a lot of time before David becomes the king. But Yishai now knows, no matter what his thoughts were about his son, this is now the chosen son, right? This is the king. Comes along source 47, which I give you, which is David is told to please come to the king to play his harp or his kinnor, whatever that instrument is, because he's having bad moods. And David ends up starting to work in Shaul, the palace, and then comes home from time to time to his father's house. What does Yishai do when he comes home? Look at the last words. He would go home, Vayishlach Shaul Melachim al Yishai, Vayomer Shalcha Elai, Es David Bincha, Asher Batzon. He would still be with the sheep. So first of all, he was just told that his son is the king. And instead of saying, okay, then number six, you know, go in the backyard and go do the dirty work, David gets thrown back in with the sheep. That's really strange. And then as he continues to work for Shaul, he continues to come home to go back into the backyard and deal with the sheep. I mean, what are you doing to this guy? It's so incredibly strange. Not only that, as David is going back and forth, the Pasuk tells us, source 49, what he would give David, okay, when he was traveling back and forth. So source 47, he's with the sheep. Source 40, he's going back and forth. Lerot etzon avihem, continuing to be with the sheep. Source 49, he's on his way to Shaul. Long trek. Yishai gives him chamur lechem, piece of bread. Noad yain, pitcher of wine. Gidi izim echad, one goat. You think about it, even Lavan gave, like, Rachel and Leah a maidservant to go with, a somebody, nothing. This is the future king of Am Yisrael, and that's all he gets on his very long journey. Compare that to source 50. You could say maybe he's poor, and he's not. Because in source 50, David brings, and we'll discuss that in a second, to the battlefield. His brothers are in the battlefield, and he brings them supplies from his father. Look at that pasuk. V'yomer Yishai l'David v'no kach nasachecha ifat kali hazeh v'sara lachem v'harat ha'machne lachecha v'sasera charitzei chalav, 10 pieces of bread, 10 things of milk. He's like supporting the whole army. David, future king, little. Other sons, lots. Doesn't make any sense. And take a step back for a moment. His sons, three of his older sons, are soldiers, right? This is the whole Goliath, you know, the giant story. David's too young to be sent to war, so he's home shepherding sheep. Yishai wants to send a message to his sons and bring them some food and see how they're doing. He's got seven sons. Which one do you choose to go to the battlefield to check on your other sons? The future king of Am Yisrael or one of the other ones? He chooses David. It's so weird, right? You would be protecting him. You would be favoring him. This is the future king. And again, he sends him to the battlefield. I mean, it ends up being good because he ends up fighting Goliath. It works out very well for us. But the relationship of Yishai and David is so incredibly strange. And he's so treated in such a negative way compared to the other brothers. To the extent that he creates this crazy bond with Shaul. If you look at Source 51 and 52, there is a description of the relationship of David to Shaul before Shaul starts trying to kill him. Vayaveu ma'od, he loves him tremendously. And I think the Psukim are trying to contrast David to his own father versus David to Shaul. Even to the extent that Shaul is trying to kill him, threw a spear at him already, is chasing him around into a cave. And in Source 52, when Shaul says, I'm sorry, David calls back and calls him Avi, calls him my father. Because he's replaced his father Yishai with Shaul, even when Shaul's trying to kill him. That's how bad the relationship of Yishai and David is. So the question is, what's going on there, right? Why does Yishai have against David? What is he doing to David? And where are we going to take from everything that we've just said? So in order to answer that question, I have two midrashim for you, and with that I will put everything together. Midrash number one is fascinating. Source 53. Why is it the midrash wants to know Yishai is so mean to David? Achad omer David ben Ahuva haya. There are some who say David was loved. V'achad omer ben snua haya, and some say, no, he wasn't. He was quite hated. We're on that view. Yishai piresh me'ishto shloshanim. Happens to be Yishai no longer loved his wife and separated from her for 3 years. Lahar shloshanim haya lo shifchana evnitavela. We're not here to judge. After 3 years, he had this very pretty maid that was working in the house and he wanted to be with her. Amar lo biti, so he went over to her and said, you know, my daughter, which is just a loving word. Titkanias ve'chalala, get yourself ready tonight. Kidei she'tochnasi alai beget shechur, I'm going to free you as a maid in my home and I'm going to have relations with you. Hacha shifcha ve'amra l'gvirta, this is a very loyal maid, instead of saying, oh, that's fantastic, she goes and she tells her master, meaning the wife. Hetzili atzmi, save me, save us all. Benevesh adonim gehenim, I want to save you and the soul of my master from gehenim. Hamrala matam, what are you talking about? What's going on? Sichala etakol, she tells her, the wife, everything. Amrala biti ma'aseh, here's what we're going to do. Shayom shaloshanim lo nagabi, says, what am I going to do? My husband hasn't touched me in 3 years. I've got no influence here. Amrala l'chivet et gini atzmech, she says, go get yourself ready. V'afani, I'll get myself ready too. V'kachasta, this is what they did. The Eved, the Shifcha, she got all dressed up to pretend to be with the husband. And when it was time to close the candle, she got up, right? The Batos Kartadel, she went, she closed the candle, then she closed the door. When she closed the door, she slipped out. Nichnasagvir v'yatzahi, and the wife came in. Bell should be ringing of what this sounds like. Asta imo kol halayla. The wife was with her husband all night. V'nitzavra midavid, she got pregnant with David. Now what happens, right? So she's now pregnant. Bikshu banei laharga. So the sons are like, wow, you know, she was with somebody else. V'yatzahi, so we have to get rid of her. They wanted to kill her and David. Kevan shera'u shehu adam. They also saw his coloring was different. And I was like, the milkman, wrong coloring. Amar lahem Yishai. Yishai's the good guy here. Henichala, leave him. Don't kill David. He'll be our slave. We'll put him in the field. He'll be our shepherd. That's why they treated him that way. They didn't know that he was legitimately Yishai's son this whole time. He never found out that David was really his son until Shmuel said to him, do you have another son? And that's when Yishai said, oh, maybe David is my son, and brought him into the room. So according to this midrash, which so parallels Yaakov and his two wives, right? The story of thinking he's with one woman, but really it's another, and the whole trick of one woman, right, being the wrong wife that he's with, is a very much parallel. And therefore this midrash, I think, is being taken from the story of Yaakov. But to explain to us the lack of favoritism, or the opposite of favoritism that we have here of David, because he didn't believe that David was actually his son. And that's why he treated him that way. He was the slave boy in the backyard. It doesn't explain to us his mistreatment afterwards, but maybe it was just habit that point, but it's certainly a fascinating midrash which answers the question. I want to put it on hold for a second. There's a second midrash which answers our questions as well, and then I'll bring the two together to give us a bigger message for all of these stories together. Source 54, Medrash Gadol. Haya ma'us be'enei aviv. His father really didn't like him. Why? Mipnei shekishahaya katan, when David was small, haya mitznapei ve'omer. He used to walk around the house prophesizing, but of course his father didn't know it was prophecy. And what would he say? Atid ani la'achriv etz mekamos ha'plishtim. In the future, I'm going to kill all the plishtim. V'la'arog me'am adam gadol shmo Goliath. And in the future, I'm going to kill this giant, and his name is Goliath. Atid ani l'bnot beit hamikdash. In the future, I'm going to build the beit hamikdash. And the father's looking at his son. What are you? The haughtiest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's crazy. Masa ba'aviv. So what does father do? Henich l'ratatzon. I got to teach you a lesson. You're too haughty. So he put him out in the field to shepherd the sheep. He treated him very low because David was so full of himself. Two different midrashim giving two very different answers to this relationship of Yishai and David. And I think now can enlighten us in terms of what are we supposed to do with all this, right? We're not choosing chosen children. We're not doing any of that, even though we understand the avot were. But what do we do? I think at the end of the day, the second midrash is a very powerful answer, which we all know, which is good parenting sometimes looks like favoritism. So our children may think that we are favoring one over the other, but that's because you can't parent two children in the same way. They are different, therefore they need different things. Whether or not that was correct what Yishai did, according to the second midrash, David did turn into David Melech Yisrael, who is amazing. So in terms of that midrash, yes, maybe he needed to be taught a lesson, and he learned it, and that's why he was able to be the person he is. But from our perspective, favoritism, right, in terms of recognizing it, or when our children say that they feel that there's favoritism going on, a lot of it is just educating our children and treating our children for what they need in the way that they need it because they are different from each other. And I think, therefore, as children, they need to recognize, and they will when they are older, as I think all of us need to recognize when we look back, that that's probably what was going on in our homes. However, I would like to look at that bigger midrash for a much bigger answer for us, which is as follows. If you look at that bigger midrash, the midrash was about a crazy scenario where David, therefore, is treated as like this horrible, horrible situation. And then even though that's true, he becomes the David who he is. If you think about it for a second, favoritism is reality in everyone's life. That is just true. But the message that we're supposed to take from it is the fact that we need to remember in Tanakh, every chosen person, every major hero that we have is the unfavored. Every last one. Yitzhak and Yishmael, Yitzhak's chosen. Yishmael, we can argue, was more loved. Yaakov and Esav, Esav was certainly favored. Yaakov is the chosen. Yosef was like the favored. He's not the chosen. Yehuda gets malucha. Yehuda gets leadership. Yosef gets a lot, but he certainly does not end up being the chosen. David, look how he is treated, and he is the chosen. Most of the time, our major heroes in Tanakh have the opposite of the chosen, favored lifestyle. Avram has to leave his home and run away from his family. Yaakov is forced away from his family. Yosef even gets kicked out of his own home. Moshe, as we know, grows up in a totally different situation. Away from his family. It's the underdog that always seems to win in Tanakh, not the favored, not the one who gets all the privileges, not the one who has everything in front of them, you know, sprawled out in front of them. And I think the message for us is so incredibly clear in all the stories, and I think that's why Tanakh takes so much time to make sure that we understand Yaakov won over Esav, and look what he had to fight to get there, right? The brothers, Yehuda wins over Yosef, and look what he had to get to do to get there, and so on and so forth. It's a very major lesson for us to learn, which is sometimes we say, there's so many obstacles in front of us, forget it. You know, or this one has so many, you know, her life is so easy, of course she can do whatever it is she wants to do, but I can't do that. And Tanakh is telling us the opposite. The underdog is the one who always wins because the underdog wants it more. And the underdog fights for it. And the underdog goes for it. And does it mean stealing a bracha sometimes? Maybe. And does it mean living in a difficult situation but pulling yourself to the top? That's what it means in Tanakh. And I think it's inspiring for us. It's inspiring for us that no matter what life puts in front of us, Tanakh is teaching us that you could be the slave in the backyard like David and turn into David HaMelech. You could be the child that is hated by their father, and hopefully none of us have any of these extreme scenarios, and become the chosen son who leads Am Yisrael. And therefore it teaches us something so incredible, which is that we just have to push hard and do what we want to do, and we can get anywhere that we want to. And I think it empowers us learning about favoritism in Tanakh. Thank you so much for allowing me to come out here today. And I look forward to coming back in the future.